go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this very first day of September 2023. It's all downhill to autumn now, y'all, but what a beautiful day this was. Goodness gracious, here in the hills and hollers of almost level West Black Hole Mansion, you stand. The sun was shining. It got up to about 89 degrees. Oh, it was magnificent. I felt warm set on my shoulders. I think I may have even darkened a freckle or two. It's just wonderful. It's Friday on the front porch. Hi, I'm Robin. And if you'd like to be part of the Merry Wacky Zany real-time madcap multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between, and the great globe around, then head over to headon.live, click on chat room, and pop right in there. You'll be greeted by the early arrivers, Theo and Squeaky, and capably moderated by Horn Chief Agronomist, Chief Mathematician, and Bud Trimmer Emeritus, Roger, in Oregon. And, well, like I said, Theo and Squeaky will be happy to see you. And more will be wandering by later. Of course, there's a button at the top of headon.live if you'd like to participate in Friday on the Front Porch. And just click on that, and it'll carry you over the river and through the woods to the old holler tree that we sublet from the Keebler Elves, wherein we keep the extraordinary, ordinary round table around which we gather each and every Friday to cuss and discuss and talk about the events of the week, things that I might have missed somewhere along the way. Everything's fair game. So that'll happen in about an hour, but every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude. Robin, where's your dog on it? I'm sorry about the late start. It was unavoidable. Honest to Pete, Robin Kincaid. You little blonde girl. I'll be back in a minute. Sorry, stand by. That was quicker than I expected. Anyway, no, every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So consequently, thanks go out to Charles. Thank you, Joseph. Thank you to Tom and Sunny San Rafael. Double thanks to Charlie. Thank you. Thank you to Mark. Thanks so much later yesterday evening to David in Oregon. And thank you to Max. Hey, Max, thanks a bunch. Thank you all so very much. We are, we had something approaching a miracle yesterday, just trying to get caught up with the end of August. We finished, well, between the end of August and the start of today, we finished with a $1,200 fundraising hole. Charlie and Max took that down by three. Thank you so much. And as a consequence, Bruce and Shirley's Memorial, or Bruce and Karen's Memorial Challenge, and Shirley's, Bruce and Karen's Memorial Challenge is met for this first day of September. So that means that those $300 will be doubled. And so we find ourselves with a fundraising hole of $600. And we'll see what we can do about that over the course of the evening. But yesterday was so important and so very monumentally helpful. Yeah, we'll have another month of broadcasting thanks to not finishing August half unfunded. And I'm so grateful. So very grateful. What's that, Lee? Lee in New York says, you were on or close to schedule. In my tech experience, deadlines were meant to be postponed. I try to be here at 5 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time every day. Sometimes there's a minute or two difference. Let's just say in this case, 3 hours is a long time to wait. We'll leave it at that. Oh, it must be lovely up in New Jersey. Ralph says it's 77 out there where she is. Note coming from Dave and the Blind Blonde. Remember, blonde is not just a hair color, it's a state of mind. Rise above it, girl, and embrace your blonde attitude. Your buddy Dave and the Blind. Oh, I do. But the fact of the matter is, sometimes it just bites you. You know the story, the blonde driving along the country road, and she suddenly sees another blonde out in the middle of a field in a canoe, rowing for all she's worth in this field. Stops her car and yells, "Hey! The hell are you doing out there rowing a canoe in the middle of a field? You're giving us blondes a bad name." The blonde in the canoe yells back, "Well, you can just come out here and kiss my ass." The blonde at the side of the road said, "Sister, if I could swim, I'd come out and kick your ass." So, it's one of my favorite blonde jokes. Oh, dear. Is it going to be one of those this evening? I want to thank you all sincerely for the kind outpouring of warmth and support. I will be seeing Boss Man Wayne soon. They sent him home from the hospital today. Hospice is coming in to set things up and make him palliatively comfortable. I'm glad they're there for him. And he called me before they turned him loose from the hospital today and said, I want you to come out to the house soon. And I promised him that I would. So I'll let him get in and get set up. And then probably Sunday or Monday, I'll go out and sit down with him. He said, "I've got some things I want to go over." Okay, we can do that. And I just wanted to know how much he's loved. And thank you, Sharon. Sharon just jumped in. So we are now down to 575 to get completely caught up with last month and the beginning of the month here. Thank you, Sharon. Ralph's noting at least. Well, yeah, count your little blessings where they are. At least you aren't strawberry blonde like Donnie. I don't want to be any. The only thing I want to be like Donnie is a human being on well, I don't know if he's a human being, but you know, a denizen of planet Earth. That's about as much overlap as I want with him. But I wanted to share something with you. You know, when we do the Patreon thank yous, you always hear me mention our buddy Horst in Taiwan. And he sent me a note today. Hi, Horst. Subject, Mr. Bossman. I hope this email finds you, and having found you, finds you in decent spirits. I hardly know where to begin, and I'm going to share this with you because it's such a profound compendium of what it means to be a longtime member of this community. You know, there's no initiation or high sign or passwords or secret handshake or anything. But to be a part of this community is special. Because, like I said, this isn't just some radio show. Horst said, "I hardly know where to begin. I recall a conversation we had some years back in which I asked about what had happened to this or that person that used to be a regular presence at the Horn, and your answer has stuck with me since. You said it seemed as though people came to the network in those days. There were quite a few more media nodes on the network in a certain state of readiness or need or what have you, and then after a certain period seemed to get what they needed and moved on. I wondered then if I should one day join that cadre, one of these here-on days. So far I haven't. But I wonder occasionally if you don't suppose maybe I've moved on. Short story is I got into a professional situation in which I overextended myself. But Horst says, I haven't been tuning into the podcast so often. I don't listen to much that isn't curated to help me get to sleep faster. Horst, check in with some of the other community members. They'll tell you that I'm downright soporific. I put hundreds of people to sleep every night. But by some mechanism of providence, I have somehow managed to get an itch to check in on momentous occasions. The first such was when you hosted your friend, Sister Terry, with a surprise reveal that you'd been in the process of transitioning for quite some time. It was my impression that this was the first public announcement. In any event, it was probably the first podcast I'd tune into in well over a year due to whatever tides were guiding my attention at the time. It was quite a surprise. I made a point to check in a little more often afterward, but I was still underwater with other stuff. Fast forward to today. Another day following an extended period of no podcast listening, for some reason I got the itch to check in, and God damn it, I hear about Wayne. You might remember, or will easily, if I mention the context around the time frame when I joined the Horn family. I never wrote down the time and date, but I recall it was not long after the Upper Big Branch negligent slaughter, so I'm guessing it was around early summer of 2010. I think it's safe to say I've been in the fold for at least a dozen years, Baker inclusive. What I don't think I ever told you about, four to five years after that, I left my job teaching English to take a minimum wage job working in a local friend's restaurant in order to force myself to learn how to get by conversationally in Mandarin Chinese. My typical day there was 12 hours with a two-hour siesta, and my first week was 9 days. I had a lot of hours with just me and my fry vat, fish oven, whatever ticket was in front of my face, so I took to listening to a lot of audio, whatever I could get my hands on. In those days, I settled quickly on Ben Birch's archives at the White Rose Society, starting with the very first broadcast he collected from your days at WWNR. In a span of about 2 years, I listened to everything you broadcasted from those days to the day I joined, and then later went back and caught up with Dr. Bill's original show, Peter, John, the Horn Section. I didn't catch just everything, but I'm one of your top media consumers up to a couple 3 years ago when I decided I needed more teaching credentials. So I've heard you speak about Wayne at length and in detail and in various renditions. I've relished the conversations you've had on the air over the years. More frequent in the early days, but always a treat when he'd occasionally phone in afterward. This puts me in mind of a message you'd often give the listeners across the years of broadcasting, that you appreciated our allowing you to be a voice in our heads, or something like that. I knew immediately what you meant, because as a consumer of podcasts, I feel the reality of this phenomenon all the time. I'm used to conversations with people who have never necessarily heard my voice. You and I, at least, have had many direct communications, that's true. Indeed, it was an incalculably influential draw for me to the Horn in the first place that my communications were taken seriously and personally and responded to in kind. And I've always felt like that was an important part of all of this. That communication and processing takes place on multiple levels. And I love that interchange. I can't speak for anybody else. But for me, it's the heart and soul of this. But Horst says, not to get too caught up in the history of things, as I said earlier, for reasons that probably even aren't even reasons, I chose today to check in and see what's new, and I learned about Wayne's current state. In my mind, as a longtime Horn listener, Wayne looms large as a quasi-mystical figure embodying the working class, the ones who work really hard. I recall stories such as the one where he was up late partying with our old pal Joe Manchin. When I first heard your program, I assumed it was spelled Manchin, M-A-S-I-O-N. And I expect I'm not the first or only one. With the labor team who helped with Manchin's electoral victory in West Virginia. But when one of the young members dragged himself in all hungover late the next morning and found Wayne there fresh as a daisy and already hard at work, the youngster was perplexed and didn't know how it was possible. It's like watching the latter part of The Hustler, and it had much the same punchline. Wayne said he was there because it was his character. The last major health crisis I remember you mentioning him having was along those lines. He said he woke up in the middle of the night, knew something was wrong, called an ambulance, probably a good 30 to 45 minutes away, got dressed like Charlie Watts and paced the living room until the EMTs arrived, got in the ambulance, and then coded 4 to 5 times on the ride to the hospital. That happened. For some reason, I had the impression that he'd taken such a different path health diet-wise afterward that he wouldn't have that same situation again. I guess that's a naive take. It was still a shock to hear your delivery of the facts today. And to be sure, Wayne changed everything. He changed everything but his heart. And I guess we only lure young guys into dark alleys and club them over the head and pull their hearts out of their chests for, you know, the Dick Cheneys of the world. And then Horst says, I don't know Wayne personally. He has no idea who I am. The only interaction I can think of that we've had online in recent memory was when I made a snarky comment about the Super Bowl opening ceremony earlier this year, and I gather he didn't like my take. Cringe. Damn it. I'll apologize to Wayne, but to no other human. But in the Horn Pantheon, he'll always be a John Henry figure to me. Larger than life and a watch-your-ass force of nature. He may not know me, but I have a very solid idea who he is. And I wish him and his family the very, very best. And you and Dr. Bill and Annette and all the kids, too. I know Wayne's family to you all. He is. I'm sorry for rambling. Horst, you're not rambling. This is the kind of communication that this network was built for. It goes against all my better instincts, but I'm going to forego a spell check and revision. English majors. I just heard the news at the end of a long Friday, which happened to come at the end of a long week. I had to say something. Of course, I want to pay respect to Wayne, whether or not it ever reaches his ears. It will. But mainly, I just wanted to share what he's meant to me over the span of, I guess, at least a decade. Please take care of yourself. I know I don't have to urge you to look after everyone else. You do that instinctively. It sets you apart as one of the caretakers in this world. Would to God we had more of you. Strength to you in these upcoming days. Maybe I can check in someday soon. Your pal, Horst. I read that earlier and I knew immediately that y'all had to hear that too. This is what sets this community apart. This is why it's a family, a community, a congregation. And why I'm not a hostess and you're not an audience. We are at the most distant, we are neighbors. At the closest, we are kin. Sharing joy, sharing happiness, sharing grief. Sadness. And what touches one touches all. And I am so inestimably proud of what y'all, not me, y'all have created. If I was just sitting here for 3 hours a night, howling into the void, I don't think the media landscape needs another one of those. But by God, in this place, in this time, on this planet, we need more community, not less. And when I tell Wayne that Horst described him as having a heart attack at 3 o'clock in the morning and getting up and getting dressed like Charlie Watts, there's still spirit and fire in him, and he will laugh. He will laugh. Oh no, Randy Radar, let's don't and say we didn't. You should hear the weird dreams that I have when I fall asleep to you. Sorry. But you're not the only one. And nobody wants in on my dreams. Whew, weird. Now, I'm coming up on 3 years without a cigarette, which is pretty amazing, after 43 years with them. I'm proud as punch of that. And so, lo and behold, I had a dream. Jesus. Annette and I were traveling through Alabama. I think we're coming back from the beach, and we had to stop in some little pissant podunk town. We had just, I think it was Carrollton, Alabama. Because we had just crossed over the Tennessee Tom Bigby Waterway Bridge. For some reason, it was early morning. We stopped in this little town. And the next thing I know, I'm looking for the car. Because I got out, I think I was trying to find breakfast or something. Must have gotten hungry in my sleep. And what I thought was a restaurant wasn't. And I come back out and the car's gone. And I go in another building. Hey, where'd my car go? Oh, well, court will be starting in a minute. You've got parking tickets. How? And then they said, of course. And I was, you know, apparently in the dream I was in a hurry to get somewhere. And I was like, well, I mean, they said, yeah, just sit and wait. It's going to take a little bit. We brought a bag of cigarettes. There's Marlboro Reds and Marlboro Lights, whichever one you prefer. Sit back and smoke. No! And it was as vivid as a Martin Scorsese movie. That's the horrid part. So, Randy, my sincere apologies. And to everyone who falls asleep to this program. By the way, Jackie in British Columbia. I received your book of poetry. It is lovely. Absolutely lovely. Thank you so much for thinking of me and sending it along. And so with all of that as prologue, some things, for instance, just to get things started, Ralps made me aware of this. Toward the end of the program last night, I talked a little bit about last night, yesterday, whatever. I got to stop doing that. I don't know if it's going to be possible after 20 years. But I mentioned a county prosecutor, I'm sure he's a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian Republican, by the name of Ryan K. Desmond. His official office photo makes it look like he's receiving an electric shock somewhere that isn't particularly pleasant. Well, as mentioned in yesterday's program, he decided that the orders of a United States District Judge in Tennessee applying to the whole of Tennessee and a statute passed by the Tennessee legislature somehow didn't apply to him because, I guess, he, Ryan K. Desmond, is a special snowflake. So he was running around threatening the president of a college, organizers of a pride celebration tomorrow in Marysville, Tennessee, in Blount County. God and everybody. With arrest if they had pride and had drag performers there, even though, again, the statute was enjoined. This story isn't even so much about drag or LGBTQ stuff. This is a story about the regard. This guy, Ryan K. Desmond, friend of Jesus, I'm sure. This guy took an oath to support the Constitution of the United States of America and of the state of Tennessee. But when he didn't like the way a federal judge interpreted said Constitution, all that went out the window. Yesterday, Blount County Pride Board President Ari Baker said, "Our goal with Blount Pride has always been simply to provide a safe place for LGBTQ people to connect, celebrate, and share resources. We've worked hard to create a supportive pride celebration, but now we're worried that law enforcement wrongly thinks this anti-drag law applies to our event." So, they hauled his sorry ass into court, and yes, a United States District Judge, complete with all the majesty of Article 3 of the Constitution, granted a restraining order today to stop local law enforcement up to and including Blount County District Attorney Ryan K. Desmond from trying to terrorize a pride celebration. Let's see if he abides by it. Of course, if he does abide by it, I'm guessing he's probably up for re-election in 24. "I tried to stop the drag queens from cramming their ideology down our throats, but a black robe judge sitting in a courthouse said I couldn't because he hates Jesus." And so, United States District Judge Ronnie Greer entered an order against Ryan K. Desmond and the Sheriff of Blount County, James Barong, the Police Chief of Maryville, Tony Crisp, and Alloka, Tennessee Police Chief David Carswell, and said, "You are enjoined from enforcing, detaining, arresting, or seeking warrants or taking any other action to enforce or threaten to enforce the Adult Entertainment Act and set a court date for September the 8th. Judge Greer even went so far as to say, "Don't you dare even try to interfere in the event in any way. Don't even discourage anyone from attending." In his ruling, Judge Greer said, "District Attorney Desmond argues that the state of Tennessee has a well-recognized compelling interest in safeguarding the physical and psychological well-being of its minors, and that he would be impeded by our temporary restraining order from protecting the well-being of youth." Judge Greer was not having it. "For one thing, District Attorney Desmond appears to concede that plaintiffs would pose no harm to children through their on-stage performances. Unfortunately, it was about a half a win, though, because Judge Greer said, "Well, listen, it's a temporary restraining order, so if y'all want to run around and arrest people afterward, go ahead." See, this is, again, what I noted in yesterday's broadcast. This is what happens when you have a failure of the Tinkerbell theory of constitutional law. If you don't believe in Tinkerbell, Tinkerbell dies. And this guy? He may be wearing a muted plaid slate blue suit with a really ugly tie. Is that his NRA pin on his lapel? I don't know. But he might as well be wearing a Waffen-SS Hugo Boss black uniform. Because when you feel like you're a law unto yourself, I did not see that coming. I did not see that coming. Nazi! Because it is on the march throughout this country, and we would do well to pay attention to the fact. And to oppose it. And if necessary, to brutally suppress it. Because that's the only way you can deal with Nazis. That crazy sheriff, Stephen New York, says, to paraphrase Archie Bunker, what that court says ain't got nothing to do with the law. Yeah. Cowbell Lee says, as a person who grew up with bronchial asthma, I know what it's like when your lungs don't work. Nicotine is one of the most addictive substances you can put in your body. I saw how smoking harms the ability to breathe, I think. Your time without smoking deserves celebration. Celebrate your hard effort. You deserve a cowbell for your commitment not to smoke. Make it a loud and proud one. Well, thank you, Lee. On the 15th, when it's officially 3 years, by Jove, we'll really celebrate. So that's one fascist in Tennessee. Yeah, we have another one. Oh, yes. Of course. Well, what is it? Leonard Skinner song. T for Texas, T for Tennessee, T for Thelma. That woman made a fool out of me. And so, like I said, Texas. This is a hell of a thing. County governments there have decided, and it's a little more dodgy. In a place like Texas, because their federal court system is a hot mess, and the Fifth United States Circuit Court of Appeals sitting at New Orleans is a hot mess, and after that, it's the Supreme Court of the United States. Do I need to say which is a hot mess, our most puissant dread sovereign Supreme Catholic Majesties? Via the Washington Post today, Caroline Kitchener reporting from Llano Llano. Dun, 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 dun. Ms. Kitchener writes, no one could remember the last time so many people packed into City Hall. As the meeting began on a late August evening, residents spilled out into the hallway, the brim of one cowboy hat kissing the next. Well, that sounds a little sketchy. Oh, thank you. I didn't realize that. Steve from Georgistan, T for Texas is a Jimmy Rogers song. So Leonard Skinner covered it? I'll be darned. I only knew it as a Skinner tune. That's impressive. Thank you, Steve. Let's see, where were we? The brims of cowboy hats kissing on other cowboy hats. Each person jostling for a look at the five city council members who would decide whether to make the third city in Texas to outlaw what some anti-abortion activists call abortion trafficking. Ah, Jesus, really? Well, what it boils down to is counties in Texas are moving to limit the ability. And this beggars the imagination, but this is the depth these fascists will go to. Limit the ability of women to travel on certain roads in Texas that could conceivably lead to them being able to leave the state and go somewhere else and obtain an abortion. Because the fetus fetishists told the city government, it's about 3,400 people in that town, Yano, Lano, Dono. That they had a duty to fight the murderers. And so the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, Christian fetus fetishists stood up one after another and barked and grunted and hooted and bleated and brayed and howled and screeched into the microphones. Until finally, a woman who sits on the city council said, I feel like there's a lot more to discuss about this. I have a ton of questions. Because, see, what people told the fetus fetishists all along, that criminalizing abortion would not make abortion end, it would just make it more difficult and dangerous. And in Texas, where women are left to bleed to death on the floorboards of their automobiles while they wait to get into desperate enough circumstances for the doctor to be able to treat them and provide them with abortion care that is the only way that they will survive, well, if that's not enough in Texas. Read a story not long ago about a little girl who couldn't get an abortion, so she had to have the baby, and now she's starting seventh grade. Because that's what the followers of Jesus wanted. So the same pernicious Nazi-ass fundamentalist snake-handling, tongue-speaking, floor-rolling, Crisco-anointing religious maniacs who came up with the dumbass heartbeat law. Well, now they've decided that women can't be trusted to use the highways of Texas. And so, what they seek to do is to make it illegal to transport anyone to get an abortion on roads within the city or county limits. And, of course, it goes hand in hand with the bounty hunter law that lets anyone and everyone sue someone they suspect of having participated in that transportation. Uber, Lyft, next-door neighbor, mother, father, brother, sister, cousin, aunt, uncle, whatever. And of course, remember, our most puissant, dread, sovereign, supreme Catholic majesties, when offered an opportunity to stop that judicial madness, said, no, we're going to let it stand. In the name of Jesus! And so for now, these fetus fetishists, these pernicious fascists, are trying to work within counties where there are roads that lead to airports, lead out of state. And they want to force Texas women to stay within Texas and have babies they do not want. For any of a variety of reasons, not the least of which being maybe, you know, the baby's not going to be okay. Two counties already have these measures, two cities. They affect I-20. They affect a highway called Route 84. Both of those head toward New Mexico, where a woman still has actual rights to the work to control the workings of her own reproductive system. And in the coming weeks, a slew of other ugly little fascist communities in that shithole state. You know, I apologize, but our friends and community members in Texas know better than I. Yeah, in the coming weeks, there'll be a shit ton more votes like this. And in a state that's up to its beetling eyebrows in maggot judges, it doesn't bode well. Mark Lee Dixon is a fetus fetishist, and he's a big mover and shaker behind this this kidnapping, false imprisonment bill. This really is building a wall to stop abortion trafficking. It ain't trafficking, you turd. And it's not just Texas. They've done it in Missouri. They've tried to do it in Idaho. So being a woman of childbearing age in these maggot states, it really does become more and more clear what the dissent in Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health said. From the moment of fertilization, a woman has no rights to speak of. She can't move freely. She can't travel out of state. God, it's almost like that scene in Casablanca where Captain Renault is explaining to Victor Laszlo, "You may stay right here in Casablanca or you may return to occupied Czechoslovakia." I think he said something like, in either case, it's a death sentence. Well, yes, that's not my concern. Last April, Idaho became the first actual state to impose criminal penalties on anyone who helps a minor who is pregnant leave the state without parental consent. And so we find ourselves coming back to a previous issue. You know, the parents who love their children will give that consent. The parental consent provisions are for parents who are into forcing their little girls, their teenage girls, to have babies that they have no business having. But Ms. Kitchener says there is some pushback even among fetus fascists in Texas. A council member named Janice Lunsford of Chandler, Texas, said, I believe we're making a mistake if we do this. And when interviewed by the Washington Post, said, Texas has already done enough to stop abortion. But then there was Councilwoman Almond in Llano, who made a point of saying, oh, Lord Jesus, I love the precious little fetuses. God, I do. I hate abortion. I'm a Jesus lover like all of you in here. But she said, once upon a time, when I was in college, I picked up a girlfriend from an abortion clinic, and I'm sitting here thinking about how people would have tried to make a crime out of that. It's overreaching. We're talking about people here. Meanwhile, the aforementioned fetus fetishist Dixon, who is, of course, a liar, you know, he's a Christian, it came to Llano, and said, a baby-murdering cartel is coming for pregnant women in Central Texas. Llano, Llano, Dono is in the hill country. He spoke at a gathering of freaks and goons and mouth breathers and knuckle walkers and people who pick their teeth with their toenail clippings at the public library there. He always wears a black blazer and wears his baseball cap on backwards. It's how people know it's Dixon. And speaking to the 25 mouth walkers and knuckle breathers, he said, by trains, planes, and automobiles, I say we end abortion trafficking in the state of Texas. See, they've picked up on the word trafficking, like child trafficking or sex trafficking. Now women simply wanting to go somewhere and exercise rights that should never have been taken from them are engaging in abortion trafficking. And he took out his Sharpie and his laminated map of the state and drew circles around 51 jurisdictions in Texas that had passed ordinances to be sanctuary cities for the unborn. And the way he defines it, abortion trafficking, is anyone who helps any pregnant woman cross straight lines, or state lines, Jesus, Robin, cross state lines in order to exercise her right to control the workings of her reproductive system. That could be giving her a ride, giving her money for a bus ticket, any kind of support. None of which falls within the traditional definition of trafficking, just like, and I draw this distinction so that we can all understand with absolute clarity that this is how they operate. It's like when they holler, groomer! When a kid seeing a transgender person is in no wise being groomed, but it doesn't stop them from lying. Because they're Christians, and therefore liars. And Dixon says, the unborn child is always taken against their will. Horseshit. How do you know? Who says every baby wants to be born? I mean, if we can look up skyward and just imagine Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and semi-literate itinerant rabbi, sitting there next to Daddy-O, saying, "Uh-uh, no, I know, you told him I was coming back. No, last time was bad enough. These fuckers are nuts. I am not going back." Who's to say a baby being recycled through the birth and death and et cetera of reincarnation, if you're into that? Nah, please, can I just reach Nirvana now and flicker out and go where the candle flame goes? Groovy. This Dixon fascist has said, among other things, that if a husband doesn't want his wife to get an abortion, he could sue anybody who took her to get one. And Nisha Dave, who runs the Lilith Fund, which is an abortion fund based in Texas, said, "The purpose of these laws is not to meaningfully enforce them. It's the fear that's the point. It's the confusion that's the point." In other words, it's terrorism. It is an attempt to get people to behave in a certain way relative to a social or political cause by the use of terror and the threat of violence. Legal or physical. And the fact that it's all unconstitutional as fuck doesn't mean much in a place like Texas, you know, until we send the 21st century answer to William Tecumseh Sherman through to burn some sense into him. And this Dixon asshole is convinced that these efforts to stop travel by women within across state lines, it's just like the Mann Act of 1910, where it's illegal to transport a woman across state lines for immoral purposes. If that's constitutional, this is too. And so basically people wanting to get to civilized states would have to go way out of the way to make sure they don't go through the town limits of Llano, Llano, Dono. He describes it as an effort to protect town residents from abortion across state lines. Meanwhile, City Councilwoman Allman says she was terribly, terribly glad, thankful to Jesus when Roe was overturned. She done voted for Donald Trump twice, and she'll do it again, even if he's behind fucking bars. And She's a gun humper when she gets a notification on her phone. The Washington Post story notes that the sound, the alert sound is two gunshots. But she's a wild card in the deck because at her consignment shop, she employs two gay guys. Oh, my. She describes her town as a community of cowboys and hippies. And she said that Dixon, I mean, to her credit, she says Dixon makes it sound like women are being kidnapped to be taken and have abortions. Sounds more like a slave situation, said Ms. Allman, Councilwoman Allman. And so it's all wait and see. And this is what happens when, as is the case in Tennessee, this is what happens when people simply don't give a shit about constitutional governance in the United States of America. And so, for the moment, they tabled the motion in that little town. And it may cost her her office. So Dixon's next meeting came in Mason, Texas, at a gun store, where he was trying to get the same thing passed, described as 20 people gathered around plates of pasta and pizza at a restaurant that doubles as a gun store. Well, isn't that lovely? Yeah, I had a note from Steve in Georgetown a few minutes ago talking about how you know, T for Texas, T for Tennessee was a Jimmy Rogers song. A few years ago, Steve was telling us about how in his county there's a store that sells, there's a pharmacy that sells guns and ammo. You know, get your Prozac, get your Xanax, and get a box of 100 Plinkin' rounds and a brand new 9mm. What a great idea. Well, pizza, pasta, and firearms in Mason, Texas. And, of course, the Dixon dude. Well, he's not living on rice and beans because this is a brutally efficient, incredibly wealthy movement. What a horror. Ralph's immortal porpoises. It's a punchline to a joke. It's really not worth the time. Okay. It has to do with a zoo. This is going to be terrible. You're going to hate me. And the zoo was down for a tornado ripped through, and the animals were the zoo couldn't keep all the animals, so local volunteers took in some of them. And they were very special animals. There were, for instance, dolphins that never died. And there were some big cats. Now, the big cats were owned by the state. And they had problems feeding all these animals. And so the director of the zoo, recognizing the crisis, showed up at the house where some of the animals were being housed and had some fresh fish. But lo and behold, the big cats were sitting on the front porch and looking rather hungry themselves, and recognizing that there was nothing to do but do it, if it were done, it were best done quickly, the director of the zoo got a running start and jumped over the big cats and ran in and gave the fish to the dolphins that didn't die. And there was a cop there, and he immediately arrested the director of the zoo, asking him what the charge was. The cop said, by the way, it wasn't fish, it was seabirds. See, I screwed it up. I haven't told this joke in a long time. Transporting gulls across state lines for immortal porpoises. I told you it wasn't worth it. But there we have it. Poor Steve in New York, if he's actually listening, is probably banging his head against his desk, howling, gnur, 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 gnur. Oh, I forgot about that. Chris says there was an episode of King of the Hill where Peggy takes over a bookstore, but it only succeeds by selling guns. Right. And thank you, Chris. Chris jumped in, and so we are now down to, wait a minute. We're down to 580 to go. No. 555. Thank you, Sharon. Thank you, Chris. Yeah, I told you, Ralphs. Oh, my God, LOL. Like I said, I screwed it up because I thought, it's not fish, it's gulls. Gulls. Seagulls. Lou in Pennsylvania. I'm so validated by this. For this moment, I hate you. I told you you would. God, that was pathetic. You have no idea how many years it's been since I told that joke, and God knows I've tried to forget it, and all it takes is one reference to the Mann Act, and we're off to the races. Randy wants to know, would someone please call Jesus to the stand? Send out the sheriff when he doesn't show up. Drag him in by his hair. Dad, I told you what would happen. Sorry, son. So, that's pretty much the Philorobster. And I think we have a good working idea of the ultimate goal of the maggots in this country, because make no mistake, Dixon's a maggot. That prosecutor in Tennessee is a maggot. And their goal is the same as it was on January the 6th, 2021. To overturn the very idea of constitutional governance in the United States of America, period. Act accordingly. accordingly. On one other thing before I attempt, emphasis on the word attempt, to start the Skype group. You're not the
first person to say that, Brother Deacon Asa. Brother Deacon Asa says, bring a voice recorder when you go see BMW. Boss Man Wayne. Yeah, I think it's a good idea. Very good idea. Oh, okay, Roger, are you going to start the call? That'd be great, because we found out last week that it's kind of a pain in the ass when I start the call, because when I shut the call down, there's no possibility of a back porch. So, it's problematic. So, Roger, if you would connect, please, I would appreciate it. One other story. Another January 6th insurrectionist. We got a couple of those stories in the stack today. Jessica Watkins. Do we remember Jessica Watkins? Jessica Watkins, last spring, was sent up the river for 8.5 years for her participation as a member of the Oath Keepers in the domestic terror attack on the Capitol of the United States of January 6, 2021. I think she was from the Buckeye State. And she is apparently the only trans woman stupid enough to participate in that. Well, bad tran. Bad. Bad tran. Because Tara Devlin and I, of Tara Buster, were talking earlier today, and she said, did you see this? And I said, no. She said, oh my God. And sent me the story, and it's like, oh, really? She's been sentenced, and she's in some sort of federal transfer facility, I think out in Oklahoma City. And she's throwing a hissy. And I want to tread lightly here, because it involves a very real issue, and a terrifying one at that. Nobody ever wants to go to prison, especially not the people who commit damn crimes like, you know, trying to overturn constitutional governance in the United States. But the thing is, apparently, she claims she is being held in a men's holding facility contrary to the orders of Judge Amit Mehta, who in Washington, D.C., sentenced her. Women belong in women's prisons, and trans women are women. Some of the people trying to agitate on her behalf have said that she medically transitioned years ago. That can mean anything from starting hormones to actually having gender-confirming surgery. Generally speaking, if a trans woman has had gender-confirming surgery, she, you know, doesn't have that thing. And it would be a manifest injustice to put her in a men's prison. Especially if she's recognized by the state, by the federal government, you know, passport, social security, driver's license, birth certificate. That would be a horrible injustice. I don't know what her status is. But this isn't about her status. It's the fact that Jessica Watkins is pissing and moaning, begging people, wait for it, to contact marginal trailer queen Matt It Just Gates Worse and Jim Jacket Off Jordan to help her get sent to a women's prison. Bitch! And I try not to use that word too often, but bitch! Do you have any idea what those three people think of women like you? A, hint, clue, to them, you're not a woman. You're a Tim, a trans-identified male. If I were you, I think I'd be sending out emails, shitters or whatever that, you know. By the way, in Mesoamerican language, the letter X is pronounced S-H. So I've taken to referring to that website run by Space Karen as shitter. And people send out shits. But she'd be better off asking for help from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Or Ayanna Pressley. Or Ilhan Omar. Yeah? Because as far as Marginal Trailer Queen and Jim Jacket Off Jordan and Matt It Just Gates Worse are concerned, put her in a man's prison! Rape the shit out of him! Maybe Jessica can get Caitlyn Jenner to write a letter for her. Because Caitlyn's one of the good ones. Ugh. But I just sort of wanted to work that one in there. God, the cognitive dissonance. Breathtaking. Oh, and Theo says, great pun, wrong audience. Transporting gulls across state lines for immortal porpoises. That otherwise clinker would have won first prize at my writer buddy Spider Robinson's fictional saloon, Callahan's Crosstime Saloon, immortalized in multiple award-winning books. Punday night is a hallowed tradition there, and you'd have been so very welcome in the place. That's one of my favorite books. I absolutely love Callahan's Crosstime Saloon. How did you know? And going back just a little ways to Theo talking about me talking about quitting smoking. Congratulations from a fellow ex-smoker. I quit for good right after I tried to smoke post-recovery from pleurisy in January of 1979. It was about the most ghastly sensation I'd had aside from inhaling campfire smoke. An unfiltered camel, my judgment wasn't always great as a young feller. My choice was confirmed during a long relationship with a compulsive smoker who died of lung cancer in 2015. God's cherisher, but she would not be dissuaded from tobacco. I know. Sorry, Theo. Ferris Bueller-like, I think I would barf up a lung if I tried to smoke a cigarette right now. Hell, I seared some Italian sausages after the show last night to have in some wonderful tomato sauce with hot peppers in it, and sweet peppers. And just the smoke from searing those sausages threw me into a paroxysm of coughing and gagging that lasted about 20 minutes. Not good. Of course, I was probably breathing some, you know, chili pepper while I was at it, because they were hot Italian sausages. But it was, the smoke was very much like a chemical weapon. Oh, and, let's see. Let's go ahead and go over to the front porch, see what's happening. And then we'll get to the other domestic terrorists. Hey, Roger.
Hello.
How are you?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. My annual harvest so far is up to 58 pounds of tomatoes.
Good Lord.
Not all at once. You know, this is over time.
Yeah, that's where I always got lost. You know, you kind of move into a constant canning mode because it's hard to let them just sit around.
Yeah, I think tomorrow we've got, I don't know, 10 pounds on the counter. And I think Patricia's got making salsa. I don't know whether she's making the chili salsa or the mild salsa. I think that's on the agenda tomorrow, along with I'm getting ready to do another batch of baguettes for my breakfast baguette slices. And we did the tomato class yesterday where we had students and processed over 50 pounds of tomatoes with the groups that were doing it, both the crushed and the halves. And then we did what's called a choice salsa.
And the have-nots? Wait a minute, you can't just blow past that. And the haves and the have-nots?
They were holes and halves. That takes care of it, you know. Things are going good here. We had a nice little rain shower that passed through the last day and a half. Sun's back out today. It cleaned the air from a bunch of the wildfire smoke, and hopefully it helped the firefighters in putting out what's there. At least it slowed down the spreads. I still don't know whether Crescent City and the fire on Highway 199 have been taken care of yet or not.
Well, Theo, who is not too terribly far from you, I don't think, Theo has been celebrating the fall of a bit of rain as well out there.
Oh, yeah. We needed it. Needed it bad. Now, when we came up from the reunion, we normally take Highway 199, which is cut over from Crescent City to Grants Pass, Oregon, Crescent City, California. But it was shut down because of the fire that was on both sides of the highway in the Smith River Canyon. And of course, we had the electric car. We normally recharge in Crescent City, top it up. And Crescent City didn't have any electricity because Pacific Gas and Electric had shut off the transmission lines because they were in the fire area and they didn't want to start any more fires or cause any more problems. So the town of Crescent City was in a blackout, so we couldn't get any electricity. So we kept coming up north up the coast. And, you know, we found a spot to charge up when we had about 30 miles left in the car, so it all worked. Just took a little longer charging up there. And I wanted to bring it up to 80%, but then some guy wanted to come by and talk about solar panels and electric cars and all the rest of it. So we chatted for about 15 or 20 minutes, and I left the charging station with 100% and made it on home. So now we know that we can make it with just one charge down to Humboldt County, and that's nice because we've always done two charges before just because we had range anxiety. But, you know, we're getting better at figuring things out. But as to my reunion, it was kind of interesting. A bunch of the, well, other than the organizer, who's the real Trumper that you've heard about before, a lot of the always Trumper forever and always chose not to show up. And it's kind of interesting because a couple of years ago, a bunch of us who were never Trumpers were wondering whether or not we wanted to show up to the reunion. And then, of course, Trump lost the presidential, and we decided, yeah, we'll show up, even though there'll be a bunch of always Trumpers, and we'll have to be nice to them. But they chose not to come this year, and I didn't have the guts to.
That was going to be my first question.
Ask any of them, well, why didn't you come to the reunion? They all had some excuse about a grandchild was ill, or they had planned a camping trip for that weekend or a bunch of lame fucking excuses. But anyhow, it was an interesting reunion, and nobody got in any fist fights. We missed the big action, and that was Nita's husband. Nita's the Trumper and the main organizer of these things. Shortly after we left the country club where we had the dinner Friday night, apparently he collapsed, and they had to call in the EMTs and all the rest of it. And so she missed our Saturday afternoon evening foray. But she did show up for breakfast on Sunday. But anyhow, apparently he had a blood clot that either got into his heart or his lung or something like that. But they did manage to get him to the hospital and get him on blood thinners and clot reducers and all the rest of it. And apparently he's now back up walking around. So that was the only real excitement, was that he collapsed at the reunion. And I'm not wishing him any ill at all when I talk about him. But truly, that was about the only excitement. So, no political fist fights, nothing else.
Suit fit great.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was still a little bit tight, but I got into it. And great fun was had by all. And since then, I've lost another 3 pounds. So, I'm shooting for 160 as my final number. But right now, I'm bouncing around 163, you know, back and forth, 162, 164. But it's continuing to taper down, and I'm feeling better. I ended up at a doctor's office the other day for a routine, and my blood pressure that used to sit around 165 to 175 for the high number on medication is now down to 125. So maybe quitting drinking beer and losing almost 30 pounds is beneficial.
Yeah, you inspire me. I need to. No, I'm taking off a little bit, but I need to. For my size, I need to get down to about 185.
Well, you're a little bit taller than I am.
And Annette tells me I'll look like a skeleton if I get to 185. So.
Well, you know, you can always be 6'3" and 215 pounds and look fantastic.
I walked into that one, didn't I?
Well, it's better than rolling into it or driving up in a golf cart.
Oh, hold on. We haven't talked in a couple of Fridays, and you've got some stuff saved up, obviously. Rolling up in a golf
cart. I've got one other thing that's gotten to me a little bit, and that's the gushing over Biden's overtime rule. If you don't make $35,000 a year, it doesn't matter whether you're on salary or not, you have to be paid overtime number. Like if you're an hourly and you're promoted to assistant manager, you get your 8 hours a day, even if you put in 10 and you don't get any overtime, blah, blah, blah stuff. The reason I'm pissed about it is one of the reasons for people to join unions is to have a contract that requires things like overtime. And by Biden putting this rule out, it is one less reason for workers to form a union. And yes, it's good that there's going to be $1.5 billion more dollars paid in wages and all that kind of good stuff. And I'm happy for the people that are going to get covered. But damn it, they should have joined, they should have formed a union and then joined the union and created the contract that did this rather than having the federal government do it for them.
I get that, Roger, but by the same token, isn't that a lot to ask of a 19-year-old assistant manager at the Rippy Mart? I mean, union? They barely know the word.
Yes, I understand that, and in a sense, it's a good thing. But in another sense, it's reducing the talking points for union organizers. In other words, if you form a union, Mr. Starbucks worker or Ms. Starbucks worker, and you've been made an assistant manager, but you're still on hourly and they're forcing you to do this shit and they're not paying you overtime for working 50-hour weeks, this is why you should have a union. And now, all of a sudden, the federal government has come in and taken away one of those reasons for forming a union. And I don't know. It's a mixed bag. But
all I did was raise it from 35,000 to 55,000. That was the only thing that was changed.
Well, I'd also like to see him come in and say, okay, interstate truck drivers get paid overtime. Because there is a rule that if you are in driving a vehicle that is licensed interstate, you get paid straight time if you're on an hourly wage. It doesn't apply to mileage pay. But if you're on straight time and your truck is licensed in two or more states, you are exempt from any overtime requirements, no matter how much money you make.
I think that was just changed in this new thing, too.
Well, if it was, that's a good thing. But we tried to form a union at the moving company I was at, and the day of the election, a whole shit ton of people came in, relatives of the owner, who were all of a sudden employees of the company, and the union election got shot down because non-workers, even though it was a complicated number that the owner of the company, this was a mom and pop company, came in and voted against the union. And when I asked for overtime pay, because I'd been putting in 60-hour weeks, I was slapped with the, no, you're driving an interstate truck. You're not eligible for overtime. I even took it to the California wage hour people, and they said, no, your boss is right. You're fucked. Which is maybe one of the reasons I got fired. But anyhow.
Well, our pal Nydia is listening. Hi, Nydia. And sent this along. AFL-CIO President Liz Schuler offered up some remarks. She said, new proposed overtime protections mark a victory for working people that will improve the lives of millions of families across America. The new rule ensures workers who make less than $55,068 automatically are eligible for overtime, and this threshold is indexed to wage growth going forward. This is one more example of the Biden administration delivering on its promises to prioritize the needs of working people. Denying overtime for workers earning over $35,568 a year is simply not acceptable, not fair, and not reflective of the work employees do every day to go above and beyond. So it sounds like the AFL-CIO is on board. Thanks, Nia.
Well, I don't deny that they would be on board, because the AFL-CIO and Teamsters and any other union always prides themselves that when they get a contract, it lifts non-union people up, because the non-union shops have to compete with the union shops, and so it raises wages for everybody.
Rising tide, all boats, all that, yeah.
Yeah, I can understand the AFL-CIO being supportive of it. But I still think the card check needs to go through.
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly. I mean, like I've said before, I was there in D.C. in January of 2009 when Harry Reid, Senate Majority Leader, said, and we will have card check by this summer. And then George W. Bush's chickens came home to roost. The economy went to shit. And the next thing you know, horrible senators like Ben Nelson of Nebraska and Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas, who were nominally Democrats, said, well, you know, this would be a terrible time to
force Walmart to deal with unions.
It's been a long, hot summer. Since the 30s.
Yeah.
Since the 80s. Anyhow, let's pass it on. Let's see. Jeremy's here, and Dave's here, and Steven's here.
Yep.
What do they got to say?
Yeah. Chime in.
It's David. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Hey, David.
How you doing?
I'm okay.
Would you all be able to educate me a little further on what you were just talking about, the union stuff? Because I am not familiar with card check, and I'm just wondering if you could explain
card check. And for instance, when Harry Reid was pushing it in 2009, Nevada has card check. Card check is just a shorthand way of saying that we're going to make it easier for workers to form union. Unions, all they have to do is check off a box on a card that says, I want to be in a union. And it basically circumvents a Byzantine and tormentive process of campaigning and counter-campaigning and torment of workers. Because, for instance, if you want to, let's say somebody was wanting to form a union at Walmart, Walmart can hold meetings that are not optional for workers, in which they can sit there and browbeat their workers for hours on end on how horrible it is to be in a union, but a union can't organize within the store. Card check says you check off the box. If you get a majority, you got a union. That's the gist of it, David. By the way, glad to see you in the room.
Oh, hey, thanks. I thought that particular practice was per se illegal.
No. And let's say a workplace decides to organize. Well, what can happen is management drags its heels and hems and haws, and eventually refuses to recognize the union and says, well, we believe that the previous vote no longer reflects the will and the desire of the employees, and we demand another election. This is one of those moments when it would be really great to have Boss Man Wayne here, because he knows this stuff upside down and backwards.
Yeah, I mean, forgive my ignorance. I've never...
Oh, no, you're fine.
Yeah.
Isn't that what Starbucks is doing right now?
Kinda, yeah.
Refusing to negotiate.
Yeah. Hi, Steve.
Hey. Fuckers.
Yeah. Hey, I wanted to, since you're here, I wanted to thank you for that generous offer you made yesterday. Is that still on the table?
It's on the table till it's filled.
Okay. You want to tell people again what it is?
You get an. I don't know if anybody's ever heard of Instant Pot. They make all kinds of neat shit. Well, I bought an Instant Pot, whatever it is, and it's a pressure cooker plus eight other things. It's a crock pot. You can.
It's a dessert topping. It's a floor wax.
Yes. No, it's not. It's a floor wax. It's a floor wax. It tastes like a dessert. I'm sorry. I couldn't resist. And then also, was it three dozen Essabagel bagels?
Yes.
With cream cheese, whatever you want, cream cheese.
Yeah, of your choosing, with cream cheese, yeah. Lox, whatever you want.
And if you're not familiar with Essabagel, which I suspect 99%, if not everybody here other than myself, isn't.
I am.
Did I send you some?
You sent me some.
Okay.
And then I also had them fresh at the location in New York one day.
Ah, good deal.
Like I said, the jalapeno cheddar bagel with the jalapeno cream cheese.
Mm-hmm.
Heaven.
Did Did you have them where you look behind the glass there and you watch them come right out of the
Yes. Yes.
And they're still warm.
Uh-huh.
They're still warm. Yep.
Yeah, that's just bagel and carbohydrate paradise.
Yeah. You're diabetic, right?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I can imagine that was probably, you know, you got to have your IV of insulin after that.
Oh, no. I just take out a couple of metformin tablets and crush them up on a mirror and snort a couple of rails.
I've been to other places that are supposed to be on par. I've never had a bagel. I mean, I haven't had a bagel in probably 15 years because I can't eat them. Because of stomach surgery I had. But when I could, those were the, honestly, it doesn't get, at least in my experience, doesn't get better.
No, those are the bageliest bagels in New York City. I don't care.
Yeah. 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 And you get a nice toasted bagel and a schmear, and it's like,
Yeah, and they don't scrimp on the schmear.
Oh, no, they don't. They don't scrimp on the schmear. Not no, they don't. In fact, it's funny you say that. That was my only complaint was I thought they put too much on. But yeah, there's scrimp is never. I've never had that in the same sentence as what you get at Essa Bagel. And I don't know if anybody actually knows what Essa Bagel means. It does mean something.
Help us
it's
out.
It's Yiddish.
Yeah.
It's Yiddish. Yiddish for eat a bagel.
Yeah. Essen. German. Essen. Eat.
Right. German. What's it called when you tell somebody to do something? Declarative?
The imperative. No, it's the imperative.
It's the imperative. When you say in German the word, if you tell someone to eat, it's S, E-S-S. And it's S, it would be S, ein, probably ein bagel if it were German, but it's since it's Yiddish, it's S a bagel.
Yeah.
And they're fucking awesome.
It's like the old Catskills joke, you know, what's a Jewish grandmother's favorite 9-letter word? E-D-D. E-D-D.
Oh, yeah. E-D-D.
And by the way, thank you to Will out in Southern California. We are down to $530 to go to get all the way caught up with August and be okay beginning September. So thank you, Will.
Oh, you made that much progress yesterday. I actually had to step off yesterday. You made that much wow.
Yeah, if somebody took you up on the Instapot deal and the Essa bagels, that would get us down to $230 to go to get all the way caught up to today.
You mean to tomorrow, or to yesterday?
No, to today.
Oh, shit. Uh-oh. Someone just texted me something. Oh, I'll be right back. My Chinese food guy's here. I'll be right back, folks.
Oh, God. Rub it in, why don't you?
Let me jump in for a second here. I was thinking about buying your present when I went to the farmer's market in Arcata 2 weeks ago. But Henry's Olives no longer sells at the farmer's market.
Oh, no.
He left during COVID. He's still in business, but he wasn't at the market, so I couldn't
well, I'm snag glad. I'm glad to know he's still in business, though. Those are the best olives I've ever eaten in my life.
Well, they are handcrafted with love.
Yeah, I went on Oregon, on Amazon. I ordered my little cherry and or olive pitter and just sat there and went to town pitting those olives. And God,
well,
they were good.
Made a deal with my ex-wife and gave her a braid of garlic. And she stopped by a place, well, they're for sale where she lives. Granzella is a hotel, restaurant.
Yeah, we've talked about that in the past, yeah.
She picked me up a quart of garlic stuffed olives, and I gave her a braid and some samples of the other three varieties of garlic I grew this year, and made a trade. And I thought I was kind of taking advantage of her till I looked at the price of fresh garlic at the farmer's market, and then I decided we're probably even. Damn, garlic was expensive.
Really?
Yeah. You know, I'm talking the homegrown organic type garlic. I forget what the price per pound was, but it was ludicrous to me.
What is it, Gilroy that has the garlic festival?
Well, Gilroy has the garlic festival.
I remember because somebody shot it up a couple of years ago.
That's south of San Francisco. But they still process a lot of garlic in Gilroy. And when you drive through, well, this time of the year, a little bit earlier, the entire valley reeks of the odor of garlic, which I thoroughly enjoy, but other people think it stinks.
No, I like it.
But
love it.
What happened is they planted back in the same fields a little bit too often, and they got that white root rot fungus in their fields. So they had to stretch out to other areas to grow, but they still truck it in by the semi-load to process the garlic in Gilroy. Because, you know, it's cheaper to truck the garlic than it is to build a new processing facility. But no, Gilroy is still the garlic capital of the world, blah, blah, blah. Now, another little tidbit here. There's a lot of garlic coming in from China, and you never are quite sure about how it's grown or what pesticides are in it and all the rest of it. If you look at the root end of the garlic cloves, and they have been trimmed off completely, that is Chinese garlic. If it's still got the little hairs hanging down from the root end, that is domestically grown garlic. So if you're interested in helping out the domestic production, just buy the one that still have the little hairy roots hanging on it rather than the ones that have been trimmed off. And the reason for that is in order to import garlic, there has to be no dirt residue. And the only way to do that is to trim off the root end to make sure that all the dirt's off of it, because you can't wash out all the dirt, so you have to trim it off. So that's a little difference. And if you want to promote domestic production, look for domestically grown garlic as opposed to the Chinese. And it's not labeled. You can't just go in and this garlic, you know, this bit of garlic was grown in China. It's not labeled that way. It's just garlic, fresh grown garlic. And anyhow, I'm in favor of domestically produced.
Yeah, that's informative because I've seen that trimmed all the way back to nothing bulbs of garlic in the grocery store. I had no idea it was Chinese.
That's Chinese.
Son of a gun.
Well, let's put it this way. It's probably from China, but it is not domestically grown. It could be coming from South America or Asia, you know, someplace else in Asia. I don't know, but domestic has little hairs and imported is trimmed very tight.
I don't know what happened to it, but for years and years and years, we had a little terracotta domed garlic baker. And, oh, I love that. You know, you'd trim them flat on the bottom and then cut the tops off so that you expose the garlic and put them all there on the little platter and cover them with nice olive oil and put the dome on, stick them in a cold oven, turn it on to 350 for about a half an hour, and then you take the dome off and just let them caramelize a little bit. God, I love that, because you could just squeeze it out on good bread, and it spread like butter at that point.
Yeah.
And the caramelizing just released all that. God. I'd love to find that thing again, or maybe buy a new one. I don't know. But yeah, I'm a garlic fiend.
Yep. Well, if you ever get to San Francisco, I'm going to post a link here to a restaurant in San Francisco. Here we are. Yeah, there it is. If you ever get to San Francisco, want to stop at this place called the Stinking Rose. It is a garlic restaurant. And it has garlic
in
any way, shape, or form you could imagine. They've got the roasted garlic. They've got everything. But it's good. I've eaten there a couple of times.
What a name, the Stinking Rose. I generally don't go for places that sound less than savory, but, well, we used to have a place here in town called Dirty Ernie's Rib Pit. And it was like, no, I'm not going to eat anywhere that's called dirty something. Nope. But the Stinking Rose, yeah, I think that's a door I'd go through.
And it's down in North Beach, which is filled with, it's the old Italian section of San Francisco. And it's got all the Italian restaurants and dive bars and all kinds of things. But they're not only garlic. I mean, they do steaks and chicken and sandwiches. And, oh, here's the picture of it.
Flavio's here.
Hey.
Hey, Flavio.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
How do I turn off my camera?
There's a little button with a camera, and you push the button, and a slash goes through it, if it's like what I've got.
Oh, awesome. Okay, there we go.
Yeah.
We're good.
Oh, and by the Success. Way, my apologies. If anybody's been trying to get through on the stress line, sorry. I guess it hasn't been plugged up in a while, and it just, discharged. Took like 4 or 5 days, but I've been a little bit addled, so my apologies. Trying to put a charge on it now. Go ahead, Flavio. Go ahead, Flavio.
No, it's been a long time. I apologize.
Quite all right. You doing okay?
Oh, yeah. My arthritis is off and on, but
suboptimal.
Yeah, I hate it, the fact that I have to use a cane now, but it's either that or fall on my face on the pavement. So that's
you really can't overestimate the value of
not
face planting, right? And now, exactly. and now you have qualified as all three phases of the Riddle of the Sphinx.
Exactly. I got it. Yep. I will not be devoured by the Sphinx.
Again, not to be overestimated. So you know it's kind of like Bill Murray in Caddyshack. So you've got that going for you, which is nice.
Yeah, no, it's all good. I'm just, okay, can I rant?
Rant on, Flavio, rant on.
WTF. This guy, okay, that I didn't even know about, okay, because I don't, honestly, when... Okay, maybe I saw a couple of episodes of the Jerry Springer Show. And that was enough for me. I was like, okay, television is going to go down the toilet. But I'm not an accomplice, okay?
Okay.
I'm not a Nielsen boy, okay?
Try.
And I just... Ever since the 1990s, I haven't watched much television at all, because when I lived in Madison, Wisconsin, the greatest, smallest town in the United States.
I was about to say the same thing. I adore Madison.
It is.
Although one institution of which I was horribly fond, had been there a couple of times with Bruce and Karen. You know, today's their Memorial Challenge Day. I found out the other day that it no longer exists, and it bums me out. It was a place called the Avenue Diner.
Oh yeah, that's
best macaroni and cheese I have ever eaten anywhere on planet Earth in my entire life. And they even sweetly gave me the recipe.
Oh yeah.
It's good. It's good.
There are a lot of places in Madison, Wisconsin that unfortunately are no longer there, because when we had Mayor Chislevich, I lived there for 12 years in the 90s, from 92 to 2004. I'm back in La Crosse, Wisconsin, which is only 2 hours away. But, you know, La Crosse, Madison, it's the same ecosystem, basically.
Same vibe.
But holy crap. When they decided to remodel the Civic Center, which was the Oscar Mayer Civic Center, which is perfectly fine. They, you know, the local honchos basically refurbished the Oscar Mayer, the Madison Civic Center, and they made it into the Overture Center. All of a sudden, all of State Street's businesses were eminent domain to hell. So all Sugar Shack Records, gone. Pick a Book, gone. All of the cool little dives, gone. Because they couldn't put up with the rent, you know? And that, you know, that was the signal to me to leave as well, because, hey, I live downtown. I couldn't live downtown anymore. So I moved back to La Crosse. And, but anyway, yeah, it's how do I put it? It's a tragedy. Basically, downtown Madison got all corporatized. It just sucked. But what was I going to say? Yeah. Why is it that American television? I'll cut to the quick. Okay. Kevin O'Leary. Do you know who that guy is? That son of a bitch.
I don't think so.
Mr. Wonderful Shark Tank.
Oh yeah, that guy.
That fucking asshole. He's okay. If you know how to read and write, Robin, I know you know how to read and write. You're a master of the art of word knowing. And I think that as long as you have basic English down, and English is hard, I recognize, but if you got basic English down and your math tables down,
I graduated sixth grade just like Jethro Bodine. Yes,
you're good. Okay, so now this guy, this son of a bitch, Mr. Wonderful of Wonder Trust, okay, is on television 24/7, okay? He's, okay, wait, I'm supposed to be muting?
No.
I'm getting a message that I'm supposed to be muting or something.
No, you're not. You're talking.
Oh, okay. This guy is going on television and scamming people about the employee retention credit. Okay. And he's on 24/7. There's a couple of other companies, but he's like on all channels. He was on Tucker Carlson. Okay. And I don't know why this scam is not being... Where is the FTC? Where is the Federal Trade Commission to stop these people from trying to scam? And it's so obvious. If you know how to read and write, you go to the IRS.gov site, do a Google search, ERC credit, okay, and you get all the documents there, all the requirements. And I think the government, the IRS, has issued two warnings about third parties trying to cash in on this. Okay, why isn't this guy in jail? In other countries, you could not do this because it's not right. It's not right. The government, honestly, I went to the site. I can flip through. I know, okay, I don't even own a business, okay? I don't own a business. But if I did, I would know where to go because I Googled. I got the IRS.gov site. I went to the tab. The right tab. What the bloody hell is going on? Why do these people thrive? Okay, I'm done.
Because capitalism. Because, you know, America loves a communist.
No. It's this fetishization of the First Amendment. This is ridiculous. No, this guy should be in jail. He's a fucking crook. Robin.
Yes.
My love, please chime in.
You seem to be doing quite the job yourself.
No, please. What the fuck is going on? Why is this guy 24/7? Why can't... And he is just disgusting. And I never watched Shark Tank. Never.
I've only seen people mocking it. The brilliant comedian Eliza Schlesinger, in one of her stand-up specials on Netflix, just absolutely guts it. I mean, as in, you'll hurt yourself laughing.
No, but why does this guy get away with this crap?
Well, I mean, really, capitalism, commercialism, anything for a buck. Larry, Daryl, and Daryl.
No, but where's the public interest? Why can't he be stopped?
Just ignore him.
Because we don't stop that shit. Just, to, you know, Squeaky's right.
No, you can't ignore him because he is... He's Hoover vacuuming all the rubes and that's gotta hurt, you know. That's gotta hurt the economy. That's gotta hurt trust in government. That's gotta hurt all kinds of things. No, we cannot ignore these people. We need to put these people in jail.
Sorry, it doesn't work that way.
Why?
There's nothing there to do anything about it.
Yeah, there's no there there.
What do you mean there's no there there? There's tons of there there.
Not within the meaning of criminal statutes and freedom of speech.
So this guy can go all over the place like the Pied Piper.
Yep.
And... Yeah, you know, that would fly in so many countries that are also democracies.
But not this country.
It's just so depressing. I hate the guy. I want to strangle him. I want to...
Well, take a breath.
I want to hurt the son of a bitch because he is...
We don't talk about... We don't evil. Talk like that.
Okay. He's just evil. May the law somehow, someday, catch up to him.
Somebody has hand up.
Go ahead. I apologize.
Well, I think the moment that the government starts chilling free speech is the moment we start sliding down a slippery slope. In my view, the cure for hateful, offensive, and ignorant speech is not less speech, it's more speech from people like yourself who are not subject to that point of view, right? It's more speech. It's more conversations like this. And it may seem grim now, but we have a media, like Robin was saying, that is wholly captured by corporate oligarchy. I mean, I don't know what to do about that. There may be some regulation to be had there. But again, that's some like antitrust stuff, maybe. I don't know. But those are just my quick thoughts on that. Thank you for allowing me to speak.
No, David, please. No, feel free. Okay. I see a hand up, Steve in New York.
Maybe I'm really missing something, but I don't even understand what Flavia was even talking about. Maybe I came in late.
Well, you were picking up your Chinese dinner that you were taunting us with.
Yeah, I mean, what's the problem? I'm not saying there's not one. I just don't know what it is. By the way, I like the whole, you know, the way to combat bad speech is with good speech, and everyone's probably going to be.
That's the learned hand approach.
And I understand people are probably going to be surprised at this. The only problem with that is that if you don't have money, you don't have access. So, at least under current interpretations of I don't want to even say the Constitution. I think the way to solve that is to tax billionaires out of existence. It's not speech.
Right.
It's
you money. You go yeah, you're hearkening back, Steve, to this idea that and I'm a subscriber that a society that has billionaires is a society in decline.
Or decline. I mean,
there's no excuse for billionaires.
Yeah, billionaires are not a sign of look what you can become. No, billionaires are a sign of. People shouldn't be that way.
Of conspicuous wealth acquisition.
Because ultimately, that's going to lead even in authoritarian societies where there are billionaires, and there are. Exhibit one: Russia. The people with the money have outsized amounts of speech and government access. That's the same way here. The only way that you, quote unquote, equalize that, the only way I can say that I would look, I'm speaking for me. I'm not speaking for everybody else. Knowing what whoever may or may not know about my purist issue with free speech or the notion of free speech, I think it's much better and more constructive to say the issue isn't what people are saying. It's the issue is that people with money have an outsized access and an outsized voice in the matter. That's the problem. And I think there's other things. You know, there's the notion of education. But again, I don't know the specifics of what Flavia was talking about, so I can't.
Kevin O'Leary is a mouthy guy with money who does stupid shit like saying, I'm going to build an oil refinery in America to do the right thing. Flavio, you want to jump in?
He was the star of a reality television show called...
Shark Tank.
Shark Tank. And which I've never seen because I don't watch that kind of television. And frankly, at about the time that Jerry Springer was on, and I watched some Jerry Springer, maybe two or three episodes. Phil Donahue, I preferred Phil Donahue. I thought he was more intelligent. But I just stopped watching television when it just started devolving into that crap. Because it was just pandering to the lowest common denominator in our civic fabric. And this guy is a Canadian. He's not even American.
Right.
He gets to go on television. He was on Tucker Carlson for, he was on Tucker Carlson promoting his Wonder Trust, which is a third party that basically skims off of the government's employee retention credit, which was a good thing. Okay. The employee retention credit was a good thing. And it was designed to help small businesses who retained, okay, their employees during the global pandemic, which is fucking fantastic. That's a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful program. But this Wile E. Coyote saw that, there was a market for interloping and getting in between the government program and the small businesses, and he is making out like gangbusters by getting in between the government and the small businesses. And if you know how to read and write, you can go to the irs.gov site. All of the documentation is there. All of the explanation is there. All of the eligibility criteria are there. You do not need to go through Wonder Trust.
What does this have to do with free speech? I'm sorry, I'm just not getting
dude,
it.
Dude, this guy, you are getting it. You're
no, I'm not.
You just don't want to get it.
No, I don't understand
what
you're saying.
No.
And you can take the attitude and take that somewhere else, Fabio.
I'm sorry, but he goes on.
What has he, Flavio? What has he done lately that has you so wrought?
He's 24/7 on on all the cable channels.
And what has he done?
Doing what? 24/7.
We don't watch channels 24/7.
I don't watch any TV. I don't own a TV.
I watch a little of this and a little of that, and I've never seen the fucker.
Really? You've never watched? You've never seen the Kevin O'Leary?
No. I mean,
Wonderful?
Is it the Kevin O'Leary show? I mean, what?
No, Mr. Wonderful, Wonder Trust.
No.
Wonder Trust.
I know Mr. Wonderful is the old wrestler Paul Orndorff. That's the only Mr.
No.
Yeah, it's like Matt in San Francisco says, you know, I watch Jerry Springer when I want to feel better about myself.
No, I apologize. What I'm saying is this guy is on cable television. Who watches cable television? People that watch MSNBC, CNN.
I've never seen him on MSNBC.
Yes, he is.
I've never seen him on MSNBC. Is it an ad? Is it a show?
Yes, he is.
What?
Why are we fussing about this?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to figure out. You're terribly, terribly wrought, Flavio, either. And I'm trying to sort out why.
Okay, you've never.
What does it have to do with the First Amendment? I don't understand that.
Don't confuse things. Let's find out the rot part, and then we'll move on to from there to the First Amendment part.
Okay. Sorry, Robin.
I apologize. Maybe I'm not making myself clear. This guy, I only have internet television, okay? So
yeah.
I watch MSNBC online, CNN online. And this guy is all over the internet.
Are they ads?
They are advertisements. Yes, they are.
Okay, so they're just bought commercial content.
Yes, correct.
Anybody with a checkbook can buy ads on any cable network, and they will happily sell it. Just ask. Yes. Just ask the people who lost their entire life savings buying gold now from Fox News TV Radio Rwanda.
Buying gold now. Okay.
It's just a grift.
That's what I'm saying. It's a grift, but why is it allowed? That's what.
Because commercial speech is pretty much protected, and there is no such thing. And there's no such thing as truth in advertising. Most people believe things exist in the law that simply are not there. It's like people who believe that the police have a duty to protect you if you're being. If you're being victimized by in a crime right in front of them, the cop can stand right there and watch you get the shit kicked out of you, and when you run to sue him saying he should have protected, there's a line of constitutional and state laws that said, oh no, not his job.
Okay, what I'm asking is, why are other democracies? There are other democracies in the United States, of course. Why do other democracies prohibit false advertising like the stuff that Mr. Wonderful puts out there? I'm astonished that nobody has ever heard.
Just turn the TV off if you see it coming on.
Change the channel.
That's
the remedy. That's the remedy. Change the channel. Okay, I'm getting a little more explanation here, courtesy of Matt in San Francisco. Thank you, Matt. Mr. Wonderful is basically an ad telling people they can get free money from the government from the COVID Paycheck Protection Program, so they're putting themselves between those that qualify for the program and the government. You can access the information. And if you qualify yourself, you don't need someone to do it for you. So it's a big grift.
Exactly.
So it's a big grift.
It's a grift.
They're probably taking a percentage of the proceeds, absolutely. And it's no different than call J.G. Wentworth, 1-800, take my bucks. Yeah, whatever.
Yes. Why do we allow this? As a civilized society.
We have no choice.
Because...
Capitalism. That's why. Capitalism.
Thank you, Jeremy. It's what I said at the very beginning. We could have circumvented, 30 minutes of this because capitalism. And caveat emptor. Let the buyer beware. If it seems too good to be
capitalism.
If it seems too good to be true, it probably is. This isn't that hard. I hate to say it's just America. But it's just America.
It's not just America. It happens all over the world. Get off this crap about the First Amendment. That's not true. I don't know what the guy's name is. I can't remember. There's a guy who's a member of the British cabinet who used to hawk this shit on TV under a false name selling stuff. Happens everywhere. If you think this stuff doesn't, if it's only here and that we're somehow unique to crap and shit... happens everywhere.
Flavio, the world is full of sheep. And there are people out there who feel that sheep are to be shorn. And this also works within the framework, and most everything does, of W.C. Fields' three commandments. God needed 10, Fields needed 3. And the first commandment is always true. You can't cheat an honest man. You can't.
Right.
An honest man is not going to fall, or a woman, is not going to fall, or non-binary, is not going to fall for one of these ads because they're going to look and go, and all the little sirens are going to start flashing and all the little klaxons are going to start going off. The only people who fall for this shit are people who think they're going to get money for nothing, okay? These are the same people who send their money to Nigerian princesses whose husband just died of fucking cancer, and she'll send you $1 million if you just send her
$10,000. Okay.
This is way to the egress.
I apologize for...
No, you need not apologize, but... Bless your innocent little heart, Flavio. And I mean that lovingly.
I just think that it's ridiculous and there should be
There should be a law. But what kind of law? How do you craft? That's where the rubber meets the road. All this free speech stuff. How do you craft a law against it? I think it's a lot. I think it's a lot easier.
Free speech absolutism.
Hey, Flavio, why don't you let Robin talk? You asked a question.
I apologize.
Let her answer.
I apologize.
This is I think it's a lot easier. An analysis when we're talking about things that wind up with people getting fucking killed. Okay? I think it's easier to talk about stochastic terrorism than it is to talk about sheep being shorn by a grifter.
Okay.
But like I said, W.C. Fields said, you can't cheat an honest man, never give a sucker an even break, and here's the important part, don't smarten up a chump. Look at where the ads are running. I don't know that these are that, but they used to be called per inquiry ads once upon a time. That meant that in the early days of like cable news and stuff, they'd run ads and, for the Ginsu or the KTEL Pocket Fisherman. And the only way that the broadcaster made money back then was if somebody called the 800 number and ordered a Ginsu or ordered a pocket fisherman or Mr. Microphone, hey, baby, we'll be back to pick you up later. And then the broadcast outlet gets a portion of the sale price.
Okay.
I got one more for you that went for almost 15 years, and nobody bitched about that. The crazy guy with the Joker suit that said the government owes you money, buy my book. It was a fucking grift.
Yeah.
Same idea.
Yeah,
it was a Riddler suit.
Yeah.
I remember that. I was just thinking about him, the guy.
I remember that one. I remember that one, yeah.
Yeah, and he was...
Sorry, in my excitement, it's a Riddler suit, you're right, not Joker, my bad.
And he was just, a Riddler suit and Devo glasses. I remember the Devo glasses.
You remember the one about the get 1,001 free things from the government? Remember that one? There was that one too.
And they're all, it's all just cons. But the thing is, it relies on people participating in the con. And the people who participate in that con, well, I mean, caveat emptor is Latin, but it lies at the roots of Anglo-American jurisprudence. You know, if you buy a lush piece of swampland in Arizona, the law is going to say that you have a duty to take a view of the fucking land. And if you buy the swampland in Arizona and it turns out to be desert, honey, that's on you.
The due diligence thing, the due diligence, yeah.
Caveat emptor.
Yeah. I'm just always astonished at the things that I see everywhere. Everywhere. I apologize. I apologize. I'm always astonished at what goes, and I'm like, what the hell? And there are people that'll fall for that. It's just amazing. And maybe I'm jealous that I don't. I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's okay.
I may have to take this phone call.
I think you probably should.
My sister from Michigan. I apologize.
And Nydia, by the way, Steve, Nydia has taken you up on your kind offer.
Cool. Make sure. So Nydia, send Robin your contact info. And I will follow up.
Mailing address and what kind of bagels you want and what kind of schmear.
Yeah, and if she needs and if she wants, I can give the website that she can find all that shit out on, like what kind they have. Then I can we can get that to her so she can choose whatever she wants.
Hey guys, yes. So again, I'm just
what Nydia said, Flavio, is where I think Flavio has a point, is there are many elderly people who get ripped off with these scams and there should be stronger consumer protection laws.
Yes,
sure,
yes,
sure.
That's what I'm saying.
And,
that's all I'm saying.
And it isn't, and you know, that's fine. You know, there are places that have stronger consumer protection laws than others, and, well, buy
we
gold.
We can do better.
Buy gold.
We can do better.
What? Yeah,
we could do better.
But we could do
that's
better. We could do better with this Senate and this House. Basically,
no, I know.
Basically,
Flavio, let Robin talk.
Basically, the states regulate these things, and so in Alabama and Mississippi, Stan,
and Mississippi,
Alabama, Mississippi. Stan, I don't know about Mississippi, but I don't think you're as bad as Taliban. But, you know, Tennessee, Stan, God knows Texas, Stan. Yeah, rip them off for all they're worth. Because the state government just doesn't give a good goddamn.
No, they don't. No, they don't. And it's horrible. It's just horrible.
Yeah, it is. And that's the government that those people vote for year in and year out.
Yeah,
we talk on this program, and Steve and I have gone down this road a number of times about, as liberals, as progressives, we need to be careful about talking down and saying things like, why do they vote against their own interests? And that is so elitist, because it makes so many assumptions about people. It assumes that we know what their best interests are, and they don't. It assumes that we know better for them than they know for themselves. And it assumes that just because we look beyond the bullshit trappings of the religion industry and people out there barking and grunting about, they're going to get your Bible in class. I mean, look, here's a perfect example. Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America. This guy is a damn simpleton. Columbia and Harvard educated, master debater. And the guy gets taken in by internet hoaxes on an almost daily basis. The latest is he shot a video standing in front of a bunch of regular Americans talking about how, by God, he's not going to let the Biden administration tell people they can't have but two beers a week. It doesn't exist. The Biden administration hasn't said, and this is a complicated public policy, public health term, dick, about everybody only having two beers a week.
It isn't a thing.
At all. But there's Rafaelito standing there with the camera, with the cameras going, pulling up a shiner buck because he's a real Texan. Yeah, he'd probably be better off with a Corona considering, yeah, but never mind. Or a Modelo, or a Dos Equis. But he screws off the top in a real manly way and says, well, here, this ain't going to be the only one I drank.
Isn't he a Southern Baptist, by the way?
Yes. You know, and we're back to the, you know, the Roman Catholic Church doesn't recognize the authority of the Greek Orthodox Church. The Protestants don't recognize the authority of the Pope at Rome. And Baptist deacons don't recognize each other in the liquor store.
Hey, Robin.
Yeah.
I hope you didn't think that I was mansplaining.
No, not at all. You're fine.
But I have to call my sister Renata in Ann Arbor. And so I bid you adieu.
Adieu.
Again, it was just something that...
No, that's fine. I mean, Brother Deacon Asa agrees with you. Yeah, O'Leary is a scumbag. He tried to run out here as Canada's Trump. He got 1% of the vote in the primary.
He is horrible.
Yeah, he's a bullshit artist. Yeah.
Yes. And we're so vulnerable to people like him.
So Gruskat, Auf Wiedersehen, sayonara.
Tschüss.
Ciao.
Tschüss. Tschüss.
And we'll talk soon, okay? And let's see, David, you have your hand up.
Yeah, can we circle back to your point that you made about capitalism at the beginning of this conversation? Because I think it's a good kernel that we should probably flesh out a bit, right?
Yeah.
Like, so if people don't see the government doing things or working on their behalf, and all they do see is the government working on behalf of big corporations and billionaires, they're more willing to believe that the government is out to screw them, right? So if somehow, and I know this goes back to Nancy Pelosi and back to the beginning of her last term as speaker with H.R. 1 and getting money out of politics, right? If we were to be able to pass something like this, because we have gotten enough people to vote in a Congress that would do so, I know I'm head in the clouds, you know. I understand that, but
we need that, David. We need heads in clouds.
What I'm saying is. If we were to get the money out of politics by some miracle, right, if we were to get the money out of politics and we start enacting economic policies that work on behalf of the American people, which I believe Joe Biden is trying to accomplish, I think that if once people start seeing that government is working on their behalf, and we leave behind this 80s idea of the "I'm from the government, I'm here to help" joke that Reagan made, I think we would see naturally a decline in people willing to believe that the government's out to screw them, that the government, that there's some
I think you're right, David. Look, this didn't come about as some form of accident. Okay, this was a concerted effort by the right wing. And I've talked about this on no few occasions. But it bears repeating. It has taken generations for the Republican Party to get American citizens to hate their government. Because there was a golden age of American citizens loving their government and feeling proud of it and feeling like they were a part of it. And that began when FDR saved God alone knows how many millions of lives through the New Deal. His predecessor in office, Herbert Hoover, was perfectly willing to let Americans starve to death, because keeping Americans from starving to death was not an appropriate purpose of government. And you can see it reflected today in the opinions of people like Fat Dead Tony Scalia and Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can Fappy Thomas, when they say that things like, well, Fat Dead Tony infamously said, you do not have a constitutional right not to be unjustly executed by the government. Or Fappy Thomas and Sammy Alito talking about things being unconstitutional because they're not firmly rooted in American history and tradition. But there was a time when working people and poor people understood that government was actually trying to get something done. And you're right in referencing old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan.
The 9 most dangerous words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. What, Mommy?
It was cynical and it was ugly. And I could take you anywhere in West Virginia today and find you a perfectly, otherwise wonderful human being. But if it got down to politics, the first thing out of their mouths would be, yeah, well, fuck it, they're all crooks. And that's something that I've called over the years soft voter suppression. Because if you can get people to think, well, you know, they're all crooks, fuck it. Well, why bother voting? Stay away from the polling place, and only the hardcores will go vote. And that's how, you know, that's how West Virginia winds up with its absolute shit piece of shit government. Because if you look at primaries, for instance, a 38% primary turnout means, okay, 38 by 2, that's 19 and 19, yeah. That means 20% of the registered voters decide who will govern the other 80%. And then you've got, and I've referenced this, I think it makes an early appearance with Strom Thurmond in 1948.
I leave Democratic Party. Democratic Party left me.
Because Democrats were moving towards civil rights. And, well, you know, Strom was was banging the upstairs help like a cheap gong. And outraged at the idea that those people would swim in all swimming pools. That's 1948, and there's not, and said, you know, not a dime's worth of difference between the Democrats and the Republicans.
He ran on that platform in 1948. In 1968, George Wallace runs on the same platform. There's not a dime's worth of difference between a Republican and a Democrat, and runs around the country. You know, George Wallace's populist fascism, you put any of these modern maggots to shame. And then in 2000, you get Ralph fucking Nader saying there's not a dime's worth of difference between Republicans and Democrats. And all of that results in a disaffected, disconnected voting population that sees no point in it. And comes to hate government.
And I think what plays into that too is the Democrats' willingness to this fetishism of bipartisanship, right? They're using it as a shorthand of what you were just speaking about the government working for the American people in the past. And for somehow the Democratic Party establishment, especially the older members of the Democratic Party establishment, have come to the conclusion that what the American people want is bipartisanship, when what they actually want, if you were to ask them, I would assume, is the a government, like you were saying, that works on their behalf and not on the behalf of corporate oligarchy. And
right. But you've got people like, well, I've been kind of hammering on him for the last few days. You know, Ali Ahenobarbus out there singing, if you weigh 300 pounds, the taxpayers shouldn't pay for your fudge rounds. You know, because kicking down, punching down is ever so much easier, you know?
Than actually solving problems,
right? And it plays well out on the hustings, because people who are struggling to survive day to day, we've been taught, and Boss Man Wayne used to talk about it so much, it pissed him off so much. He said, "Why is it that one guy will see his neighbor have a good union job and making a living and being able to buy things and having health care and a pension and a dignified retirement, and the guy that doesn't have that doesn't say, why can't I have that too? He says, why can't I drag him down to my pathetic level?" That's cheap labor conservatism in action. That is teaching envy, which is a distinctly different word from jealousy. It's not that I want the same thing you have. It's I want bad things to happen to you because you have those things. That's the distinction between envy and jealousy. You know, all those old European cultures, you know, with their signs of the evil eye and shit. I've got an evil eye bracelet, believe it or not. But it's what toxifies this. It's what toxifies American society and other societies as well. Because we have gone from. Oh, I didn't mean to preach like this. We have gone from an era of, let's all, you know, the World War II era of, you know, scrap metal drives and victory gardens, and, you know, sacrifice at home so that we could defeat global fascism. That's gone. That civic mindedness is gone. You know, we talked about that. Oh God, when Maria hit Puerto Rico, and I said, why are we not doing a Berlin airlift into Puerto Rico? We have the technology. We could be doing that yesterday, but we made a choice not to. You know, why is it that the only way the United States can get to space is by paying a derpy Batman villain, like Leon Scum, who doesn't have the, let's see, he doesn't have the panache of the Joker, or the swagger of the Penguin, but he's the guy who can get us into space, because we're just not so gosh darn star spangled awesome anymore.
It may have something to do with the zero-sum thinking that the that was introduced into the American populace right around in the 60s when, well, you don't want those black people to get what you have, you know? There might be something to that as well. There might be something to that sort of mentality that plays on the baser instincts of humanity that the Republicans are just so adept at doing because they've been practicing it for so long that I think there might be something there.
I think there absolutely is. You know, the Republic, it used to, you know, Dwight David Eisenhower, when he was president in the 50s, said, any political party that advocates for an end to Social Security will cease to be a national political party. He was right then, but he's wrong now, because it's an article of faith of the Republican Party that Social Security must be gotten rid of, that Medicare must be gotten rid of. And it has everything to do with people of color being able to access the system. I've heard myself, white racist people saying, you know what they do in them black churches? They gather there after Sunday services and they tell people how, and they tell their membership how to get on the welfare and stay there for life.
Without ever having visited a black church ever in their life.
Right! It's ugly, it's hateful. And it's as American as poison apple pie. I wish I was wrong, but I'm not. I do need to make a couple of announcements. Thank you very kindly. Nydia stepped in on Steve's very kind offer, and I want to thank an anonymous contributor who took us down to five. Wait a minute. 505. And so Nydia has now taken us down to 205. $205, and we are caught up with all of August and the first day of the month. And that amazes me.
We're only $5 behind for August.
No, we're $95.
Right, yeah. I know, I was thinking, yeah. Oh, yeah. So we had, okay, maybe we didn't have a Thursday or Friday on the
phone. Oh, no, this feels pretty miraculous.
Oh, hold on. Hold on. Okay. I'm going there.
I'm holding. There.
We didn't have a one-day miracle. We had us a miracle from a two-day revival.
Oh, glory.
Glory. Oh, the Spirit just... Well, I won't say what the Spirit just did to me.
Oh, shimmelan ding dong. Mersey dotes and dozy dotes and little lambsy divey. Glory.
Hey, Robin, can I make some topics from tonight?
Yeah, sure, Jeremy.
A couple topics from the past. So I passed along that story in chat to you about someone probably everyone's heard of, even if you don't know what he's supposedly famous for. Robert O'Neill. He's the SEAL who claims he killed bin Laden.
Right.
And he didn't do it. They'd never announced who really did it because it'd be marked for life. He didn't do it. He's just the front face for it. But he's been grifting on that and telling that story over and over again for 5 years. He's also the same SEAL who got thrown off Delta permanently for not wearing masks during COVID and putting up a hissy fit. Well, 2 days ago, he was found outside of a bar drunk in his car. When the police roused him out, he fought with them and called the black one the N-word. This goes back to mixing in with our military and police forces are filled with these vile people. Yes, he's X, but it goes to prove they're there. They're embedded.
Oh, they absolutely are. And even though he was part of the SEALs, that's still a certain amount of stolen valor. I was kind of hoping when you got to they found him drunk in the car there was going to be a tutu involved. But, you know, that's me.
I was, too. He was definitely arrested, though. And I have no doubt he was a member of Team 6. That's all true. He probably was on the raid. But let me just tell you, he was not the guy who killed him. He'd be marked for life by terrorists if they did that.
Actually, just like, it was in a bar, and the bartender and this hotel security tried to escort him up to his room, and the hotel security was a black dude that he assaulted in the hallway outside of his room on the fifth floor. And the security guard had to be taken to the hospital and checked out because of his injuries. Then the cops got called after the security guard called it down, and he argued with the cops as well, and they escorted him out and hauled him off.
Okay, thanks for the correction. I knew it was somewhere he got arrested and called someone the N-word. Still, yeah. It just goes through the fact that this stuff is buried in our society.
Hey, Jeremy.
Yeah.
What do you want to bet that at least one time during those various confrontations that guy said, "Do you know who I am?"
I guarantee he did. All these guys who've come out after their service, written books, are pretty much blackballed by the association, because they want to keep this stuff quiet. It's even been exposed in the last 4 or 5, actually the last 10 years, that whole story of lone survivors, Marcus Littell, and how he survived, you know, a shootout with 200 Taliban guys, greatly exaggerated. It was maybe 10 to 30 Taliban guys that took down a team of four. It's still a lot against four people. And in the end, he has admitted he crawled away to save his life. He ran from his team. So his book and his movie is a lie, too.
And this particular individual we were talking about that just got arrested also got popped for driving under the influence up in Montana, and that case got dismissed for some unknown reason.
Because of his celebrity.
Well, probably, but and this is not the first. Well, as you say, he had the problem with Delta Airlines. He's had the problem in Montana, and now he's got this problem in Texas. So the guy's kind of a loser.
But like I said, it wraps up grifting and the whole problem of probably have a large degree of supremacy in our military and police forces. It's hidden, but it's there. Not so hidden anymore, though.
Oh, yeah, and there, you know, there were two, because we are coming up on the end of the program, and since Roger, let me just clear this up, since I didn't start the call, that means the back porch can continue after I'm gone, right?
Yeah, I just leave it open.
Yeah.
And sometime later tonight, I'm going to run off and start making some bread and won't be around, but I'll leave it open. And then I come back, and if people are still here, I start bullshitting again. And if people are all gone, then I close it down.
Okay. So there were two more sentences today among MAGA terrorists. And just as we suspected, the maggot judge, well, went easy on him. Because, of course, I'm trying to find the story.
Well, the DOJ asked for like 33 years, and the judge gave him like 10 to 12. Somewhere in that neighborhood. But still, 10 years is not a really light sentence.
Kind of is for trying to overthrow the government of the United States.
They'll get out 5 on good behavior and that kind of bullshit. But
you know what, though?
To wear an orange jumpsuit for a while.
Yeah. I think, and tell me if there was recently there was a case where there was a sentence, and the DOJ actually appealed the sentence.
Yes.
I think that might just happen here.
Well, this is 3 times now that this maggot judge has pulled this shit. Yeah, because he said,
it's not like they set off a suitcase nuke or something.
So if they set off a suitcase nuke, then they would have gotten 33 years. How fucking stupid is that? If they set off a suitcase nuke, nobody would be here to do it. Fucking people. Asshole.
Yeah, let's see here. I've got the story. One of them was, what's his fuck, Nordine. Ethan Nordine and Dominic Pizzola. Oh, I'm sorry. Nordine got 18 years. The government wanted 27, and they wanted more than 10 for Pizzola. So Stuart Rhodes of the Oath Keepers and Proud Boy Nordine got identical sentences. Curiously, the maggot judge, Kelly, did accept the recommendation to apply a terrorism enhancement, which means they sought to influence the actions of government through threats of use of force. ...18 years and 3 years of probation. Again, prosecutors had asked for 27. Nordine's pettifogger, Norm Pattis, awful, who was awful.
It's not like he tried to search for members of Congress and he didn't assault a police officer.
So he, Nordine apologized.
No matter how we all tried to individually slice January 6th, we must all conclude it was a complete and utter tragedy.
Yeah, this fucker thinks it was a tragedy because they didn't get to overthrow the government.
But also remember, in the case of Stuart Rhodes and the previously centered Proud Boys before this, and the Oath Keepers, the DOJ has come back and said, oh, no, we need to up their sentences. That wasn't enough. They're requesting upping of all the sentencings. So DOJ is not satisfied.
But by the way, just so I can clarify, this is the same DOJ that Merrick Garland heads that everyone said was shit. Is that this one?
Yeah, that's yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. If you want to take a victory lap, go right ahead.
It's the exact same one. You're right, Steve. Exact same one. People pissed and moaned about saying it was going too slow, even though he's now convicted 1,008 people of all the people he's found.
And you know what? I want to say something real quick. All these people say it was going too slow. It should have been back, There was this is a comment that I never heard anybody even address. Fonnie Willis said, because there was something in a story about how it took 2 years. And basically the reason was because it took 2 years to do all of the, and now she is ready to go to try.
Right. So, So Kenneth Cheesebro goes, I want a speedy trial. And she goes, cool.
Okay, cool. I'm ready.
That probably turned Cheesebro's lawyer's bowels to water. Here's another one, though. We talked in yesterday's program about Brandon Fellows. He went out of the courtroom screaming about a kangaroo court and a Nazi court. That was after the maggot judge, Trevor McFadden, found him in criminal contempt. And so some of the jurors sent a note to the judge. One question. We wanted to confirm. These are the jurors writing, and I think, Steve, you'll understand the gravity of this, so will everybody else. One question. We wanted to confirm that the defendant does not have any personal information on individual jurors since he was defending himself, includes home address, etc. The maggot judge, McFadden, said both parties are given limited biographical information on prospective jurors at the outset of the trial. The court collects those sheets from the parties at the conclusion of the trial. Not exactly inspiring.
I was just going to say, that's a non-answer answer.
Yeah. And in light of the fact that, say, you remember the Pontifex Maximus Reverend toenail clipping from West Virginia who's been federally charged?
Reverend toenail clipping. That's fantastic.
Thank you. But he's a Nazi, and he's been charged with stalking the jurors who convicted the Tree of Life terrorist. Over at the Center for Election Innovation and Research, David Becker, the ED there, said that Trevor McFadden's response was unusual and troubling. The jurors have legitimate concern about their safety, and rather than telling them quite simply that there's no way that the defendant has their personal information, name, address, cell numbers, etc., this response could likely heighten the concerns of the jurors. The safety concerns of jurors are significant both here in Washington, D.C. and in places like Georgia. And this little fucker went all the way through trial representing himself. And never repented for a moment, screaming that the election was stolen. Among other things, he left threatening and obscene voicemails for his pretrial services officer, and even called her mom. What a dumb thing to do.
Robin, you know what's going to happen
for their own safety.
You know what's going to happen for that to that guy once he goes to jail?
Yeah,
He's going to brag and pull his shit to the wrong person.
Or he will be welcomed into the fold of the neo-Nazis because, you know, many federal prisons are just neo-Nazi university. Oh, by the way, I've been awarded a cowbell courtesy of Suman for Reverend Toenail Clipping. That's Pontifex Maximus Reverend Toenail Clipping to you, Suman. Thank you.
You would be surprised, though, Robin, about prisons and jails in general. I mean, I know you worked in the legal system for a time, but even prisoners, when they go to jail, as weird as it sounds, there's a code of conduct. And with most criminals, gangsters, mafia, you name it, being caught and going to jail is part of the job. Killing people or threatening people for doing their job against your job is not part of the job. The Nazis, in some weird way, may not accept this guy. As weird as that sounds, I swear to God it could happen.
Oh, and just a couple other things on the way out the door. Bless their hearts in Fulton County. Judge McAfee, I think his name is, the trial court judge, has signed an order saying that Nitwit Nero's trial, all the trials, will be not just televised, but live-streamed. Scott McAfee said, we've been live-streaming all of our major proceedings on a Fulton County-provided YouTube channel, and our plan was to do that with this case as well. And then in describing the process, said, we'll have to iron all this out, and it sounds like we might get plenty of practice. Ooh, he's got a sense of humor.
You know, I just heard something. I don't know if anybody else heard it. I just heard what I think was Scott Marinoff, wherever he is, laughing hysterically at that.
I think you may be right. And then just, again, one last thing. We're a little over time, but that's okay. Because thank you, Emilio. We are down between our kind anonymous friend and Emilio. We are down to $200 to go to come up even with right here, right now, be fully funded for August. Whew. And that is such a big deal. But I can't quit Nimrata Haley. She is such a horrible person. And by the way, going back to Matt just for a second. Oath Keepers. I spell it O-A-F, Keepers. Matt says, I just still can't get over a militia group headed by a guy who shot his own eye out. I mean, not one member thought, I wonder if it's safe to do live ammo play with a guy who shot himself by accident. I know. And kid, you'll shoot your eye out. Bang! Only it wasn't, you know, wasn't a Red Ryder BB gun with a compass in the stock, Matt. No. 9mm pistol. Missed it by that much.
Wait, you want us to follow you? Where's your other eye? You shot it out? But it goes to show you the mentality of the
maggots. No, I can't quit Nimrata Haley, you know, and every time I mention her name, I talk about the day that she was hoodooed into thinking she was talking to the president of Poland when she was UN ambassador for Nitwit Nero. And how she went on at length because she was terribly, terribly impressed to be talking with the president of Poland and had a conversation about an Asian island nation called Bonomo that doesn't even exist. And all I don't know how they didn't just lose it laughing. That they must be good, the morning zoo crew there from Moscow 98.8, the vulgar boatman. What a dipshit. But she's being covered like she's a statesman. And so now with the most recent glitch, I mean, I'm not this mean. Apparently Nimrata doesn't know where the word Senate comes from. The paucity of classical education in this country is bearing terribly stupid fruit.
I figured we couldn't go a whole program without hearing about Rome. Sorry.
Fuck you very much, Steve.
Oh, don't go promising me a good time.
Oh, come on. We know about you.
Come on now. Give Steve a cowbell. He deserved it. It was a good joust. It was good.
Okay.
But she's... Senate comes from Senex. Senex, Senectus, I think. David, you want to help? Latin teacher? I think I'm right.
My Latin is woefully inadequate.
No, we've got another David, a former Latin teacher out there. Our buddy Mellow Moonlit Meadow. But it means old. The Senate was designed as a place for old people. Of course, bear in mind, in 1787, old was, you know, 55, because they were knocking back a couple of gallons of cheap Muscatel a day with a shot of laudanum back. Drunk motherfuckers.
Does that laudanum count as a Star Trek reference? I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, that's latinum.
Okay, I was just
that's saying, a Star Trek reference.
Okay.
Oh, I've got enough latinum to choke a rope head. No, laudanum. It's a tincture of opium. Also in alcohol. I mean, you want to talk about a buzz. You could stare at the buckled tops of your high-heeled shoes all night long on that shit. But it comes from the word for old, just like the Greeks had a similar body called the gerousia. Or the Jerusia, if you want to do it hillbilly style, from which we get the words geriatric. Again, it was a body of old white men. But nonetheless, Nimrata Haley, apparently not realizing that she too, if she's lucky, will someday be old. She's not exactly a spring chicken now. After Mitch McConnell glitched, you know, and look, sometimes if you don't update the operating system once in a while, you're going to have those. And he may be past updating. He's 81 years old. He has probably consumed no small amount of bourbon in his elder years. I mean, if you had to deal with Nitwit Nero, you'd have a Jeroboam of Old Crow in your desk with a straw that was a swirly straw that came all the way up to chin level. Him not having one and all. But Nimrata referring to Mitch McConnell and presumably Dianne Feinstein, who has had a far more illustrious career, said, "Right now, the Senate is the most privileged nursing home in the country." Now, bear in mind, she's 51 years old. And I guess realizing she had stepped in it, she said, "It's sad. No one should feel good about seeing that. Mitch McConnell's done some great things, and he deserves credit. But you have to know when to leave." Nursing home. And she wants to be president of the United States. Can you imagine if she became president of the United States and said, "And I want the House and the Senate," and the Senate would just sit there and say, what's that, whippersnapper? The nursing home may not be up for that, bitch. And so she wants competency tests for politicians over 75. And then she went on and said, "I wouldn't care if they did them over the age of 50. You know, because she, Nimrata Haley, can certainly memorize person, man, woman, camera, TV, right?
And this is the same woman who talked about a fake island and fake nation with a fake radio station?
Yes.
She wants a competency test?
Yes, she does. Because she's special.
Boy, the goddess of irony is up there throwing lightning bolts.
Well, Brandon. This is good. Hi, Robin. Hi, Brandon. Subject, Nimrata. I just can't stop thinking of Nimrata as being nothing more than the poster child for tooth whitening. Peace, lady. Peace, Brandon. Poster child for tooth whitening. Hi, my name's Nikki Haley, and I'm here to talk to you about crest whitening strips. Yes. But she is. She's going to get old someday. And she might feel like that she's politically competent then. God, I hope she's not in government. Maybe she can have a show on Fox or something. And the fact of the matter is, up until... Look, I'm the wrong girl to expect to defend Moscow Mitch McConnell. He's odious, he's horrid, he's terrible, he's left people, especially in his own state, to die miserable deaths in the mountaintop removal sacrifice zone of eastern Kentucky. He's garbage. But he's also a polio survivor who should know better. And even though he survived polio, he has dealt with the after effects all his life. And maybe he should have retired, but he is absolutely besotted, addicted to power. And he loves it.
You know, Robin, I think one of the after effects of polio as a kid was that turtle-like face. So when he plays Marco Polo, he can stay down with the rest of the kids.
Jeremy.
I have no shame. This is him we're talking about, of all people.
I understand. She went on and said, "These are people making decisions on our national security. They're making decisions on our economy, on the border." Yeah, because, well, Pedro's south of the border is in South Carolina. "We need to know they're at the top of their game. You can't say that right now looking at Congress." I guess Kevers McCarthy, the man with the spine of silly putty, is another geriatric too. But I gotta admit, I would like for the goddess of irony, you know, it's not a request. You never make requests to the goddess of irony. But I would not be surprised if the goddess of irony has something in store for Nimrata. And they said, and by the way, the news out now is that Moscow Mitch glitched because he had occasional lightheadedness from dehydration and a previous concussion. Let's get to the point where, I mean, she's awful. But I do kind of hate the fact that now we obfuscate the illnesses of aging politicians by talking to them or talking about them the way that the Soviet Union used to talk about its fossils.
His glorious man of people who needed small break definitely did not have stroke and fall out the window. Definitely was not pushed.
Gross. But y'all, it's been a heck of a couple of days. Thank you so much for your compassion and your kindness. I'm going to tell Boss Man Wayne about all of it. I absolutely will. And I appreciate it. And anybody over the... Well, we're down to $200 to come up even and have a fresh start on September. Got enough to pay some bills, and that's going to be hugely helpful. Thank you. And Nydia, I will provide your address and to Steve, and I need and go to look up Essabagel, Essabagel, and you can find all their cream cheeses and all their different bagels, and you can tell Steve what you want. Okay. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thanks to our challengers. Thanks to our a la carte contributors and respondents there, too. Thank you so, so much. TJ, I saw you pop into the room a couple of times. I'm sorry we didn't get to chat. Theo, thanks for the reference to Callahan's Crosstime Saloon. That was wonderful. And I think I'm going to be rereading that. I think it would be good for me. Thank you to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Okay, Jeremy. Cowbell Jeremy says, I don't like to whore myself out, but you did laugh at my joke, and that means a cowbell. Okay. There. Randy Radar said, Mitch looked like he was staring at the angel of death. Who am I to say he wasn't? And, thank you, Matt. Matt in San Francisco says, Robin, make sure you do some self-care this weekend. You've had it a bit rough lately. Take care of Robin. I'll try, Matt. I really will try. It's just that weekends are get-shit-done days. But I will. I'm going to try to take it easy on me a little bit. Thank you so much for that, Matt. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Roger, in the chat room and in Skype and for starting the call. Thank you for the corrections, the update or the information, Steve, from Georgia Stan. I will never forget that. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Hey, y'all, please like and subscribe to the podcast. And if you're finding these conversations enjoyable, please tell your friends about them if you have any like-minded, progressive, liberal friends. Because this really is unlike anything going on anywhere else. And has been for almost 20 years. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Coal River Mountain Watch is the point of the point of the spear in the struggle against mountaintop removal, and I'm proud to be associated with them. Hello, tiny spider. Sorry, that caught me unawares for a second. Please stay safe. Either get your booster or wait for the next one to come out. I had a story this evening. Apparently the numbers on COVID are and what it's done this summer are dramatically inaccurate. And there's a lot more COVID in this country than official sources indicate. It's not a conspiracy theory or anything like that. It's just that people aren't testing, and they're damn sure not reporting it. Wear your mask when you're around the maggots, because they don't give a damn about anybody but themselves, and they don't care much about them. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer, carry it with you, pocket or purse. Maintain your social distance. And if a January 6th punk-ass little jackass comes, well, he won't, he's in the joint. But if he's Nazis, kangaroo court, avoid him like the plague, Brandon Fellows. Because he is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Love you, Wayne. Have a great weekend, everybody. Later.